Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for needlework artists.
Yay.
Trying to get back on the every other week thing on Wednesdays. So we have the podcast today, which means no stitch hour tonight. Then we'll have a stitch hour next week, stitch and chat, and no. See, I'm already screwed up. Okay, so no stitch hour tonight. We will have a stitch hour next week, but it will not be stitch and chat. We will have Barbara Hudson with us.
Oh.
Queenstown Sampler Designs, and we are going to look at her Nashville releases, which she really put together a collection. So, yep, just before we started recording, I got that set up and forgot about it already. So next Wednesday, 8 o'clock, Barbara Hudson will be with us, and we'll be looking at samplers, so that'll be fun. She's always a treat, and apparently she has stories to tell about her samplers. So,
fun.
Yeah. So that's next Wednesday. Sunday, our guest will be Susan K. Williams, who is the chief executive at the Royal School of Needlework. So her third time, I think it's the third time we've done a show with her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots going on at the Royal School, so we're going to learn about all that. And Susan is, of course, a wealth of knowledge anyway, so that'll be fun on Sunday. Yep. Other than that, we're not doing anything. No. Killing time.
Speak for yourself.
Mentioned on the EGA sponsored the Sunday podcast. And in the promo for that, there is a code for $5 off the virtual lectures. Now, they're charging $5 per virtual lecture this year. So basically, they're offering a free virtual lecture. And the code is FiberTalk and the number 5. And that gets you a free lecture, basically. That is good. Somebody asked about some more detail for that. So I got some detail. That coupon, FiberTalk 5, when you sign up, is good for the virtual lecture through May 1. Okay, so the rest of this month and April. So and Sally Maver is the one that's coming up. So you'll want to use your $5 off to see that, because Sally Maver is one you don't want to miss. So it's either $5 off on a current lecture or a recorded lecture. So, you know, keep that in mind too, because all these are recorded. So FiberTalk 5 is the code when you sign up for a lecture at egausa.org, and then that will get you basically the free lecture, $5 off. So get you a free lecture, either recorded or a live one through May 1. So take advantage of that. That is really generous.
It is generous. Do you have to be an EGA member to take advantage of the lectures?
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Forgot about that detail. Yes. So join EGA.
Join EGA. Right.
You know?
And I didn't listen to the live version and haven't listened to the recording yet, but Kathy Andrews just did a recording.
Yep. Yep.
So that's on my list to listen to.
Yes. So, yeah, join EGA. Trust me, you will not regret that expenditure. That's good. That's money well spent with the EGA. And I would say that whether they're sponsoring Fiber Talk shows or not. That is an organization. And that's the thing that I think is deceptive, is it's Embroiderers Guild of America, and a lot of people think that that is surface embroidery, and that's it.
And oh, yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have said, I don't do embroidery, I only do cross-stitch. Well, cross-stitch is a form of embroidery.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, do not make that assumption, because they have, well, they have master classes for counted canvas work, all white work, I mean, all kinds of things. It's all, yeah, it's embroidery in the broader definition of needlework. Yes.
It's embellishment with a needle and thread.
Yes. So, and that's why you know, we can comfortably say you will not regret joining, because what you do, no matter what needlework you do, it's part of the EGA. Yeah, join them. Yep, join them. April 2nd, got all kinds of things coming up here. April 2nd, our guest will be Dawn Cook Ronigan. And Dawn was a guest probably 2 years ago, maybe more, because she put out a book, Needlework Accessories, Historic Collection. She's a collector of all these cool old things. And so we had a great talk with her then. Well, she has a new book coming out that just is out, just out. It's called Sewing Rolls, Needle Rolls, and Huswifts. Is that how we say it? Or
I don't know. I stumble over that every time.
Okay,
I try
thank
not to
you. Because I've heard people say housewives.
Well, that's how we would say it now, but it's not spelled that way.
Right. So anyway, Dawn has this new book out, and it is tremendous. I have my copy right here. It is a tremendous book. So she's going to be our guest April 2nd, and we'll talk about her.
I bet she'll tell us how to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's the first question out of the gate. How do we pronounce it? Yep. Mm-hmm. I've already put that on the list. So Dawn will be with us then, and you want to check out her book. Now, you can get the book at Sassy Jack's and all other places. Sewing Rolls, Needle Rolls, and Huswifts. That's how I'm going to say it, because that's the way it's spelled. So,
sounds good.
Yep. So that's April 2nd. Dawn will be with us. Yeah, that's going to be pretty neat. She does a nice job with her books, because she's a terrific collector of old things. So, yep. Let's see. Still looking. Here we are. Now, here we are, March 22nd. We haven't recorded one of these. We're going to get them. Stitcher to Stitcher shows. We have three people signed up. If you want to do one, send me an email, gary@wetalkfiber.com, and we're going to get this underway here pretty quick. Time.
And those are just short 15-minute-ish.
Right.
Chat with a stitcher.
Yep. Yeah, not a designer, not a leading figure, you know, not the head of our the Royal School. Just regular stitchers talking to us, regular stitchers, about what we're doing. Yep, short. And their video. So, yeah.
So we get to see the things that they've been doing.
Right. That's the plan. Yep.
Fun.
So send an email to get on the list, and we will get these going. It's one of those things, once we get going, we'll just cook right along. But it's getting off the mark here that's, yeah.
Right.
Time.
Right.
Yep. Cyber pointers. We got anything going on with the cyber pointer people?
Yes, actually. This year is our 15th anniversary.
Well, that's big.
In September.
Cindy's the president, for anyone who doesn't know, of the cyber pointers, which is the online wing of ANG's greater group. Yes.
Right. The online chapter for ANG.
Join them.
And yes, which means you have to join ANG. But we have lots of great programs coming up and workshops, which I can't tell you what they are off the top of my head, but we kicked off the year with a Stitch Your Own Scissor Case project, which I have stitched. I haven't put it together yet, but I cut it out the other day. And so we meet, we have an online meeting every other month, and our March meeting was Corners and Curves by Lorraine Salt. I'm working on that one right now.
Can I just say, if Lorraine Salt would try, she'd be really talented.
I mean, it would only take a little bit of effort.
Yep. Just a little. Her stuff. But she's one of those, the minute you see it, you know, it's her.
Right. Now, I would not say she's as crazy about Jessica's as Curdy Biggs is, but this Corners and Curves Projects has 28 Jessicas.
Whoa. All right.
I think I counted this morning. And I've stitched them way more than 28 times, and I'm not done with all 28 of them yet, which means that I made a lot of mistakes and had to restitch. But I'm really happy with the way that it's coming out. And we have a Rosashi project coming up, although I think the registration for that is closed. But you can go to the Cyberpointers website. It's cyberpointers.org, I think, and look at the education page to see what's coming up for programs and for workshops.
Yeah, it's a cool group. You guys are really active. It's very neat.
Yeah, and we've been, the officers have committed to doing the projects and programs. Not everybody is doing everything, but we've got one or two people for pretty much every program and workshop coming up this year who will stitch along and share progress photos and, you know, kind of trying to engage the members.
Yeah.
And we are, last member count, we were at 601 members.
That's a big group.
Yeah, it's more than 10% of ANG's total membership.
Wow.
So what we're doing for our 15th anniversary celebration is I made up a list of all of the programs and workshops and correspondence courses that we've done over the past 15 years. I didn't count last year.
Yeah.
Or no, it goes through 2022.
Okay.
And the and said post pictures of the projects of your finished projects. Doesn't have to be finished, but the stitching has to be finished. And post as many as you've done. We don't care, you know, just post pictures of them. We want to see pictures. And then we'll do door prize drawings for the September meeting. We'll have a door prize drawing every day.
Okay.
And a door prize is a year's membership.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. You know, this day where people, you know, I got to believe a lot of people, the pandemic has made them quite comfortable staying at home. But people who don't want to go out at night to meetings, don't want to go to meetings, monthly meetings, don't have a local chapter, you guys are the solution. And it's right. Very cool. And but it's not just this lame thing. I mean, like you just described, there's projects all the time. There's activity all the time. So it's not just this figurehead group. You are an active group. And when you get 600 members, I mean, geez, something's happening. So that's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. After the Rosashi, we have a little Ornue project by Jennifer Riefenberg. That's registration for that is closed also. What is not closed is Debbie Rowley is doing a project in September, maybe, that is still open for registration.
Okay.
And it's can't remember the name of it, but it's a fun piece that she did on black canvas with kind of a watercolors with peaches and oranges and purples in it. It's a fun little project. Again, yeah. You can see photos on our website.
Yep. Yeah, go check it out. It's a really cool organization, active, like I said. So, yep. Yay. Good going. Yep. So I have to say that I'm having great fun with my vintage Singer sewing machine.
No kidding. That's awesome.
What an idiot.
Did you get it rewired?
Huh?
Did you get it rewired?
I've done all the wiring.
Good.
And I have dismantled all of the metal parts except for the main shaft. The advice from all the experts is do not pull the main shaft out of the body of the Singer sewing machines unless you, one, know what you're doing, and two, or maybe even one, really have to, because that's tough. But everything else has come off. I have become an expert at cleaning metal. in a very short time. This one I have is 1948, so you can imagine the gunk that is embedded in the metal. But I've gotten it all down to the metal, and now I'm starting to put it back together. One part came apart, and I was kind of not really paying attention to how it went together, and I had two springs. And when I went to put it back together, I could not figure out how to get the two springs in. And so I had to write to an expert restoration guy, and he did a little video. Well, those two springs were actually one spring that I didn't break them. They were broken.
Oh.
And part of this I'm learning is finding parts for machines that were made in 1948.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I've become an eBay customer, and the parts are out there. It's just finding them. So it's kind of an adventure there. So that's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
These things are just masterpieces of mechanical engineering. It's just amazing because they didn't have ball bearings that they would use. You know, it's all metal on metal, and what keeps it going is persistent oiling.
Right.
And some parts, the parts that move have to be polished smooth, and I've become really familiar with wire brushes, and it's great fun, and how these things work is just amazing. And then when they get them together, they're smooth as silk, obviously if it's working since 1948, I mean, name one product made today that, you know, basically 75 years from now, you know, will still be working. And no, no.
Nope.
Yeah. So I bought that one. That one's all in pieces, and I'm now about ready to start putting it back together, but I need that spring. See, that's the trouble, is I need a spring to put it back together. But then I found another one. Okay. Yeah. This is the trouble.
Mm-hmm.
A lady wanted it's like $35. So I got another model, different model of Singer sewing machine. So that's sitting there waiting to be worked on. And that one, they come, some of these, like the first one I bought is in a piece of furniture, a cabinet.
Right.
That is beautiful and is still in really good shape. But the second one just comes in a box, because they have to sit. They aren't designed to sit on the table. They have to be up.
Mm-hmm.
So this one has a box that is just a train wreck. So now I'll have to build a box. So I'll have that experience too. So I've been mixing, stitching, and degreasing.
So your new hobby.
Yeah. Marga made me promise that two machines was going to be it. So. She says, you're not going to start collecting these. Okay.
They're a little harder to deal with than skeins of thread.
Right, right. Yep. Yep. So, but I think when I get this one, I have in pieces right now, when I get it together and get it sewing, I think my first project is going to be to try and make a project bag. We'll see how that goes. So, yeah.
Neat.
But it's been fun. So, yeah, it's some nights it's stitching, and other nights it's working with metal and Dremel tools.
My great-grandmother had a treadle sewing machine.
Oh, those are so cool.
My sister had it. I don't know if she's kept it because they've moved so many times. I assume she still has it, but I don't know that for sure. But I remember as a kid, you know, playing with the treadle.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, I would kill to have a treadle machine. Even if it was a wreck, I'd put it back together. They're so cool. Yeah.
Maybe three machines, right?
Yeah, I don't know
when
if I can.
That treadle.
I may have to sell one to get another. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Play that game. Yeah. But it's fun. Oh, you know, if anybody has old machines, send me photos. I'd be anxious. I'd be curious to see them, if you know, because there's a lot of people that use them exclusively. Actually, active sewing people who use them exclusively. These vintage things. So yeah, I would be, if you people have machines, send me a photo. I'd be curious to see what you have. Yeah, just for the fun of it. Yep. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Different. Yeah. And it's quite a community. I've been surprised. I bet I'm a member of four or five. It's like Margaret said, your whole Facebook feed now is nothing but needlework and sewing machines. Yeah, I know. It's all right.
Perfect.
I've eliminated all the other stuff, all the riffraff. Yeah. But it's a tremendous community of people. And again, you'd think it was women. It's mostly men who are doing these restorations.
That doesn't surprise me.
No?
You know, women use them, but the men like to take them apart, put them back together.
Yeah. But, you know, and what a world of knowledge and databases. There's one I found that is pages and pages of all the screws and bolts used in Singer sewing machines. You know,
wow.
what the bolt is, how long it is, what the thread is, the whole bit, and pictures of every single one of them. Yeah. Yeah. And there's databases. There's a couple of databases. Singer has one, and then there's another organization where if you have the serial number, you can look up the day it was made, you know, what model it is and when it was made. And yeah,
wow.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. Yeah. From all over the world, you know, because a lot of Singer machines were made in the UK. And mm-hmm. So there's that whole world. There was a factory in Canada, and apparently that there was a fire or something happened, and so all the data for all those machines was lost. And so people end up with Canadian machines, can't figure out or have to make good guesses about when it was made. And and so many of them, they were all black. You know, all the old ones are just right. High gloss black. But then they had these beautiful decals put on them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quests is, can you get a machine where the decals are intact, which is tough to do. But then that's okay because there are people who make replacement decals.
Right.
Yeah.
I did watch a video of a restoration of a Singer sewing machine because I love to watch restoration videos, furniture and machinery and... I mean, it's just fun to see how people take things apart and clean them up and put them back together and make them beautiful again and workable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cool stuff. It really is. There's this one guy I follow on, he's been my main source of information, Bob Fowler on YouTube. And he's just hundreds and hundreds of videos for different models, taking them apart, how to clean them, how they go back together, mistakes not to make, you know, the whole bit. And he does it all, cleaning and rewiring and the whole bit. And it's just an amazing world. And the thing that I learned, I think I mentioned this last time, but I'm not sure. My first inclination when I got my first machine was to get a bucket of soapy water and wash it.
Oh, no.
Would have been the biggest mistake I would make. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Do not do that. Mm-mm. Oil.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oil. Use the oil to remove oil.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Hard to believe. Yeah. But that's what you do. Yep. You get your container of oil, and yep, that's how you clean the surface. That's how you... get old oil loosened up. You just put more oil on it. Yep. No water, no alcohol, because alcohol dissolved the clear coats on there and ruined the finish. And yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, some other solvents might work okay, but you'd have to be really, really careful.
Yeah. Yeah, the advice is don't do it. It's not worth the risk.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, a lot of people want instant results. They want whatever it is to come off right away. And so, you know, that's when they start using some of these more aggressive solvents. Oil takes a while to work.
Yeah, yeah.
But it'll work. And you might have to apply it repeatedly if you really have a buildup of crud.
Cindy,
but it'll work.
Let me just tell you, that is the statement of the week right there.
Uh-huh.
My machine, I can't tell you how many times I've been over that, the first machine I bought, with oil, thinking I got it clean. Yeah. Wow. Takes forever. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a lot of patience.
Yep. So, yeah. So that's, yeah. New fun. New fun. Yep.
So what are you stitching on?
I'm in the home stretch of the Sarah Parr sampler. I am on a mission, and I've been potted away on that. Yep. I see the end. I'm just about to move to the last band. So, yep.
Oh boy. You are close.
Yeah, no, I've been pounding away at it. I just haven't posted pictures, but yeah, I've been pounding away at it pretty steady. Yep. Yep. Yeah, you get to that point where you can see the end and you're just all in. Yeah. Yep.
Stop. Yep.
That's where we're at. Yep. So doing that. Yeah, I have pretty much set everything else aside because I want it done.
Right.
Yeah. So what are you working on, all CyberPointer projects or?
Oh no, I have way too many things started, and I've started way too many new things this year. But I did finish two things. I finished one of my pumpkin projects and finished the stitching. It's not finished yet.
Yeah.
But then I also finished another one of the Beautiful Stitches projects that our local chapter did. We did Autumn Fireworks last year, and then at the end of the year over the winter break, when we don't meet face to face, we just do Zoom. We did summer fireworks,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a companion piece to the other one. But I kind of flip flop the colors. The autumn fireworks I did in really bright rainbow colors, and the summer fireworks I did in greens and golds and burgundies.
Okay.
So I guess I need to flip flop the names, but.
Whatever.
Anyway.
It's your piece.
That's right. And I've started two correspondence courses through ANG that are Sue Reed pieces. I've started another Sue Reed piece through ANG. I'm leading our face-to-face chapter through a Elizabeth Almond Blackwork Journey project. It's called Fantastique. And it is a fan shape, and it has surface embroidery outlining the fan, and then black work sections and pulled thread sections.
Oh my.
And so we have quite a bit of interest in some of our newer members in learning some of these, you know, pulled thread and black work techniques. The surface embroidery came along as kind of a surprise. I hadn't looked all at the, project all that closely when I suggested it, and I didn't realize that the fan was outlined in, and she gives several options, you know, she does a back stitch and stem stitch and chain stitch, a whipped back stitch, and then a double knot stitch. And I told everybody, I said, you're going to want to practice these. And I needed to practice them too.
Yeah.
So I set up a doodle cloth for myself and went through her list of suggested, and I added couching. I couched a crinic down as an option, which I think most everybody is going to choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
On her model, she used the double knotted stitch, which actually is a palestrina knot. Not actually, I mean, it's also called a palestrina knot. And I found a video on Mary Corbett's site that showed how to do that. And I did it, and I didn't like it. And then I watched the video again for the umpteenth time and realized I'd done it wrong. So I ripped it out, which knotted stitches are not easy to rip out.
Yeah.
And restitched it. And I think that's actually what I'm going to use for the outline around the fan, because it's really a cool stitch.
Mm.
So, you know, we had to transfer the pattern onto the fabric. And she calls for 28 count linen. I'm doing it on Congress cloth.
Okay.
To, you know, to show people that you don't have to do, you don't have to use the ground cloth that the designer calls for. And I did enlarge it a little bit, 24 count versus 28 count. You know, I wanted to have about the same amount of room for the pulled work and the black work stitches.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually started the actual project. I've just done the doodle cloth. But I need to work on that so that I can go on to the next thing next month, which will be the pulled thread stitches.
Yeah.
She just used standard floss, you know, nothing special.
Uh-huh. Talk to me about black work. I have three black work books. I'm fascinated by it. I want to try it someday, but never have. Is it particularly challenging? I know you know, different levels, and you can get to a point where you're basically doing shading with black work stitches. But even to start, is that, you know, so you don't have stuff going all over on the backside, is it just a little bit of practice, or is there a challenge there?
You can make it as hard as you want to make it.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't bother with, if you want to stitch it so that you, I forget what it's called. You would stitch a half, you stitch a path, and then you stitch back through the path to complete the pattern.
Uh-huh.
And you use double running stitch for that. I have always struggled with making double running look straight. To me, yes. It's always a little wavery. So I just use backstitch.
Okay.
I like backstitch. You have to plan your path sometimes. You want to make sure that you don't drag your thread across an open area where it would be seen. And that's even more important if you're using something like a canvas. Not quite as hard with Congress cloth as it is with 18 count canvas.
Yeah.
Because the holes aren't quite as big. But you can even do black work on 18 count canvas. You just have to pay attention to where your thread is going. And on that, I might use the double running.
Okay.
Just to make sure that I am not dragging my thread. But, you know, a fairly closely woven linen or even weave fabric, you know, you can go across a 2x2 square and you're not going to see it from the front.
Yeah. But so you do have to be mindful of that, because you in most instances, you're a darker thread with a lighter ground. So...
Right.
You can't just completely ignore that, right?
Right. Absolutely. And if you're, you know, using a black on white or a dark blue on white or whatever, yeah, you absolutely do have to pay attention to that, because you don't want your thread to show through from the back. You know, so I've never done anything that involved a lot of shading or any of that. It's beautiful. I love to look at it, but I'm happy with just filling shapes with geometric patterns.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of black work is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating technique. And when people start using different weights of threads and all the things they can achieve at the high end of that, it really is impressive work. And with one color, you know? Yeah.
Right. 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 But, you know, for a lot of it, I haven't done a lot, but the first project that I did was a dragon, and my mom was actually going to do it for me. But then when she realized she had to transfer the pattern to the fabric, Mm-hmm. She said, no, I don't think so. You do it. So that's the first hurdle you have to overcome, is getting the fabric or the pattern transferred onto the fabric.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing we talked about. And I have a light box and I brought it to the meeting, and you know, that, so that made it really easy. But two of the people had chosen darker fabric.
Oh.
So, and I didn't have a white lead pencil with me. So they went ahead and transferred with the regular lead pencil and got enough of an outline on that they could see it, so that they could, you know, get a white pencil,
yeah,
and go over it. But, you know, the simple thing is tape your pattern to a window and put your fabric on top of it and trace it.
Yep.
You know,
it works.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the simplest way to do things. And then you have to outline the, you know, cover up your outline that you've drawn on there with whatever kind of stitches you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you fill in with the different black work stitches, and just the different stitches. You know, you can do one that's fairly open, or you can do one that's a lot smaller to get the different tones,
mm-hmm,
of, you know, darkness,
yeah,
lightness,
yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to use different weights of threads, or I have seen some samplers where they'll take a shape and, you know, it starts out fairly open, and then you just keep adding lines to it or curlicues or whatever, and until it gets fairly dense. And that's another way to darken a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Just by adding elements to the initial more open pattern.
Yeah.
There's lots of fun things that you can do with it, but the simplest thing is just simply filling a shape with a geometric pattern.
Yeah. Gotta try it.
And I learned how to do black work through EGA.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to try it. It's it's one of those techniques I don't think gets enough credit, or enough exposure credit, whatever, for the art that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, because it's a kind of thing where you don't have to have a collection of colors. You can do it on really a whole variety of ground cloths, as you just described.
Right.
And you don't have to learn how to do Jessica's and Walnetto's. And
right, it's one stitch, back stitch.
Yeah.
Or running stitch. Or a combination of both.
Yeah. But, you know, and the end result is you get some really beautiful stuff. And, yeah, I don't know why it doesn't catch on more, but
actually there are a couple of designers who are doing stitch alongs that have been very, very popular on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Peppermint Purple is one of them, and the Steady Thread is the other one, and they are both really really nice. They've both had really nice designs the last, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years, I think, is the first time I noticed them and started following them.
Yeah.
And then I found another designer that does black work that has a little more of a, I don't know exactly what can't come up with the exact word, but so I have two of her patterns, and I can't remember off the name off the top of my head what the designer is. There's one that is poisonous plants.
Mm.
It's a little bit of a dark turn. And then the other one was plants like sundews, the carnivorous plants.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
Venus flytrap, and yeah.
Right, exactly. So she's done both of them as kind of like Victorian greenhouse kind of things.
Oh.
where each plant is on a little shelf. The one that was the poisonous plants also had like apothecary jars, and you know, so the plants were basically outlined and filled with blackwork stitch patterns. And then the bottles, apothecary jars had, you know, little, I think, labels on them and blackwork designs. Same thing with the sun, with the other one, the carnivorous plants, you know, kind of a greenhouse vibe.
Uh-huh.
And they're just really fun, little slightly different blackwork, ways to use blackwork.
Yeah.
And she has some other things. It might be the witchy stitcher.
Okay.
I'm not positive.
Well, that name would fit with that, with those topics, that's for sure.
Right. Anyway, they're a lot of fun to do.
Well, I follow Peppermint Purple. She does some pretty impressive stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's good. Yep. All right. Yeah. As soon as I get a spare moment, I'm going to go for it. Mm-hmm. Which means I'm
the Blackwork Journey, Elizabeth Almond's website, she has a ton of free patterns.
Oh.
So the Fantastique we did pay for, I mean, everybody just bought their own pattern. It came out to be like around $5 for the pattern. So, you know, they're not expensive. Her designs are not expensive for the most part, but she's got a boatload of free patterns. And she does a lot of different things besides blackwork, but most of it is blackwork. So that's A Blackwork Journey is the name of the website.
Okay. Well, Elizabeth Almond, she's kind of viewed as like the queen of blackwork, right? I mean,
I think so.
Yeah, I tried to, she didn't want to do a show. I tried to get her. She just wasn't interested, but she's been suggested to me by many people. And
Yeah. Okay. The designer is Urban Stitches, not Witchy Stitches.
Okay, well, Urban not, Stitches.
Urban Stitches.
So if we want macabre blackwork, we go to
Urban Stitches.
Stitches, okay.
And these are both stitch-alongs, but I think they're available on her website still. One of them was called Until Death Do Us Part, and that was the poison. and she writes a little... It's like she's writing a letter to an aunt or something like that, you know. And so she writes a little letter with each release. The other one is Victorian Toxic Plants.
Okay, this is a person we got to get on a show. This is a mind we got to talk to.
Good point.
I love that. There's a little warped in there. That's good.
I'll see if I can. I'll send you a link to her website.
Yeah. I think we need to talk to her. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they are not. She uses color. Or you can. I think you can do them all in black and white if you want, but you can also use the color.
All right.
They're just fun, different.
We got to hunt her down. We got to hunt her down. Yep. I love when people who just have that little twist to them, and then they make that show up in the art. It is so much fun. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. All right, that's another one for the list. We'll get her to get an email off to her and see if we can land her. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, who would think to do black work with carnivorous plants? Why not? It all fits together very nicely. Yep.
Yep.
I've done a lot of photography at botanic gardens with carnivorous plants. They're beautiful things.
Yeah.
To everyone but the insects. Mm-hmm. Oops. Yep.
Yeah.
So I was thinking the other day, it's the old, do we have more stuff than we can do before we die?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
10 or 12 times over.
Yeah, but that's okay. So then it goes along with that. What if you didn't buy anything and just stitched on what you had for a year?
I wouldn't make a dent in it.
Yeah, okay. All right. That was the next question. Would you make a dent? No.
No, because no discipline.
Yeah, I just ordered two more charts from the Assembler people.
Uh-huh.
Gotta
yeah,
have and those. Mm-hmm.
I just signed up for Debbie Rowley's circle dance class.
Uh-huh.
Started last week.
Yep.
Like I need another canvas project.
Yeah, that's part of the fun. Part of the fun. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, got speaking of the Assembler, we've got Marguerite Hoag, owner of the Assembler. She'll be a guest here coming up, too.
Great.
Yeah. Anxious to talk to her because she gets samplers that we don't see anywhere else. So.
Right.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. Yep. That's a different world right there. It's interesting to me. The sampler thing is because basically most of the samplers, and you know, this is a generalization I shouldn't make, they can all start to look the same,
right?
At some point, but then I say that, and then Barbara Hudson comes through. If you look at her Nashville releases, she found a new vein of samplers, very different. But then when you go to the Assembler, holy smokes, that's just not of this world. And so where do those come from as opposed to your conventional Bristol samplers or Quakers or whatever? You know, how do you hunt those down? What little mine do you go to find those? So I'm anxious to talk with her and find out about that.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure that there's just a plain old cross-stitch sampler is going to be a lot more common than something with other kinds of stitches, just as it is today.
Yeah.
People that want to try the other stitches, they're perfectly happy doing cross-stitch, and there is nothing wrong with that. I'm perfectly happy doing cross-stitch too, but I love to do the other stitches also, which is, I guess, the reason I do a lot of canvas work.
Right.
But samplers that have, you know, things like queen stitches and eyelets and, you know, stuff like that, those are the ones that I'm more interested in.
Yeah. And that's the thing is the sampler she has, and I have three or four of right now. I mean, we're really getting in almost in, it's counted, but it's really surface embroidery because of the variety of stitches you're doing. And this one Jane Turner one, there's a little girl in there. Beth and I talked about that. And all that's offered on the chart is just an outline. Fill it in, you know. There's no counting. Just figure it out. And
do you think samplers like that, those weren't done by the little girls?
Yeah. They were. Yeah. I mean, wow. I got to believe they had serious help, but yeah, hard to believe. Yeah. For instance, here, Mary Burgess, 1725, the Mary Burgess, age of 10. And the entire border is Montenegrin stitch.
Wow.
It's cross Montenegrin marking Algerian eye, crossover one, satin double running, and long arm cross. Jane Turner. It doesn't say her age here, but this is her second one, you know, and this is double running, satin, seed, trellis, spiral trellis, bullion, detached buttonhole, couching chain, Montenegrin, and a marking cross. But,
those weren't their first samplers though.
No.
They probably did a few cross stitch pieces right before they and you know, they might have been in school or had somebody, some kind of teacher that led them through that. I have to imagine.
Oh yeah. I got it. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's sitting there helping them. There's no doubt. Yeah. And yeah, now this Margaret Cameron that I have, it doesn't say, how old she was, but, yeah, but this one, Mary Burgess, I mean, she's 10 years old. Yeah. See, but I think that's an interesting aspect of samplers anyway, because when you look at the designs, somebody helped them put those together. Those little girls were not, you know, not,
they were, they were following a pattern, or
yeah,
somebody said, okay, now we're going to stitch an alphabet and we're going to do, you know, eyelets or, you yeah. know, whatever. Or now we're going to stitch a bouquet of flowers and it's going to have these stitches in it.
Right. Right. Because those are, they're all, the majority of them are just laid out too well for a 10-year-old to do.
But I think I've heard that, I don't know, I might be making this up, that there are teachers that people who are knowledgeable about samplers and where they were made can see similarities between different samplers done by different girls that kind of indicate that they were designed by one person.
Right.
And maybe taught by one person.
No, you're not making that up at all. No, Barbara Hudson will tell you that about that all the time, how you can track the students, the designs will tell you what teacher and the students who had that teacher. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's very much.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was something I heard on Antiques Roadshow.
No, it's very real, but it's very cool in that you can track the history.
And that's pretty obvious with the Quaker samples and the Bristol. I mean, we know where that came from.
Right, right.
But these other samplers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of these, I don't know, like this Jane Turner. I mean, it's so sophisticated that, yeah, that had to be somebody who's done an awful lot of needlework to get to that level. Mm-hmm. Has to be. 'Cause even for her to have been a little girl, the attention span just would not be there. I don't care. I don't care how much discipline's involved. You just don't have the attention span to pull off that stuff. But that, yeah. You know, that one 10-year-old doing Montenegrin all the way around the border. I mean, that's impressive. It really is.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's.
And I wonder. I wonder. Did the girls go to school, or was it governesses? Or, I mean, you wouldn't think a governess would have had that much reach beyond, right. You know, maybe a few families that she might have worked for during her career.
Yeah. Wouldn't think so. It's just kind of one of the cool things is it gives us a little window.
Uh-huh.
But we don't have all the facts.
Well, unfortunately, it's pretty common with women's history that we don't know those kinds of.
Yeah.
And children even more so. I mean, we don't know what little boys did either. Right.
Yeah.
For the most part, because they didn't probably, for the most part, consider that worthy of documenting.
Yeah.
It wasn't that important.
Well, yeah, that's just it. If these girls weren't producing tangible product from their efforts that survived, we wouldn't know. We wouldn't know anything.
Right.
And, you know, boys were probably plowing fields and, you know, taking care of horses and all those kinds of things. Well, that, you know, there's no way to record that. No reason to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I would imagine that most of the samplers that have made it this long were produced by girls that were in wealthy, maybe not wealthy, but more well-to-do urban families. Certainly yeah. Kids on a farm.
I would think so. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the boys were doing other things, but they and the girls weren't probably involved in running the household as deeply as they might be in a small town or a rural setting.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, it would be interesting, because, yeah, this, to be able to afford the silks and the cloth alone, you can't just be mm-hmm. scraping out a living out of the dirt. You got to have some wherewithal.
And to have the time to do it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing that most of the really fine work was not done by candlelight. It was done during the day.
Yeah.
You know, when there was sunlight, so it was easier to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. Because I don't care, your eyes, you just tear up your eyes by candlelight if you do very much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah. I mean, every time, when I don't have good light, that's when I make mistakes.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yep. Yep, same here. When I'm tired, can't get under my magnifier, nah, don't even bother, because you're just going to tear it out. Yeah.
Right.
Save the hassle. Yep. Yeah, that's a fascinating world. Well, all right, we got to call it here. We do. Okay. So, no Stitch Hour tonight. Just to recap, next week, Barbara Hudson, speaking of samplers and really some really cool ones, Barbara Hudson will be with us live on the Stitch Hour. Sunday is Susan K. Williams of the Royal School Network, Needlework, Royal School of Needlework, the chief executive. So we'll get to learn what's going on. They've got a lot going on. That's a reason that we connected, is there's a lot going on, and the pandemic is, I think I can safely say, has opened doors that are making the Royal School accessible to a whole lot more people. And kind of thing where we don't have to travel to London to tap into that talent and that knowledge base. And that, you know, that the thing I think is so cool is they're seizing the opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of the Royal School, some, you know, we're in our palace and we do it our way and very British, but no, they are very forward thinking with their Stitch Bank and all the other things, really, really moving things forward. And I think it's impressive. So, yeah.
Well, and the other word that I think about is relevance. It makes them relevant in today's, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there stitching, but they aren't doing it the way that we did it, through shops and, you know, teachers and the Royal School and all of that. They're finding stuff online.
Yeah.
And they're buying their threads and other materials online and putting together their own little groups, and they're just kind of doing it on their own. And by the way, Cyber Pointers is sponsoring one of the stitches for the RSN Stitch Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that they just announced that they had posted, I think, 21 new stitches, and the one we sponsored might be in that group. I don't think it had been up there yet.
Yeah.
But that is part of what we are doing, is outreach.
Yep. Yeah, important. Yeah. Yeah, and you think, well, they're only doing 21 stitches. Go take a look at how they're presenting those stitches, and you'll see why they don't just put up 100 every other week.
Right. Well, they already had probably close to 100 or more. So another 21, that's a major effort.
Right. That's what I mean is, yeah, it's not just put up a diagram and some instructions. It's really well done. Yeah. They're good.
Oh, I didn't think to look there for a Palestrina stitch.
There you go. There you go.
I have to go look and see how they do theirs.
Yep. Yep. No, so I'm excited to talk with Susan and learn what all is going on, because it really is the way they're running their operation these days. They are really opening the doors so people can tap into what they have to offer, no matter where you are in the world. And it's just very cool to have that organization be accessible like that. Is really, a huge plus. And, you know, and yeah, you basically alluded to it or said it. This is a positive fallout of the pandemic, which is an ugly way to get to these kinds of things. But, you know, the technology that was forced on us to communicate when we can't get in a room together, we're starting to see people really take advantage of it and make it work for us. And it's, yeah, it's big plus. Yep.
Yes, definitely.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yep, it'll be good. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.